morning, everyone, and welcome to this week's Mirsky & Company podcast, bringing you in-depth analysis on trending legal issues in media, new media, intellectual property, and, as today's conversation will discuss, privacy. I'm Andrew Mirsky, principal of Mirsky & Company, PLLC, a Washington, D.C.-based law firm with a practice in new media, intellectual property, technology, and nonprofits. In January, the Supreme Court agreed to hear arguments in the case of IMS Health v. Sorrell, an appeal of a ruling in favor of IMS Health that came down. The ruling came down in November by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York. The case involves a 2007 Vermont state statute, a statute that's similar to laws in many other states that prohibits the use, sale, and transfer of what's called prescriber identifiable data, referred to in the industry and here as PI data, prohibited for use in marketing purposes unless a prescriber, meaning the physician, opts in to allow use of his or her PI data. To discuss this and the case and the issues involved, I'm joined today by John Verdi. John is senior counsel of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, which is commonly known as EPIC. John and EPIC have filed an amicus brief in the Supreme Court in support of Vermont's position in the case. And I've asked John to join me today to briefly discuss the privacy issues involved, as well as some of the other issues. John, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's dive right in and go with, really, let's give a little bit of background. What are the data collection practices? The Vermont law governs data collection practices and use of that data. Let's talk, if you could, a little bit about what the data collection practices that are governed by the Vermont statute and also, as we'll see, similar state statutes and why these laws have come about in recent years.
Well, Vermont, like other states, requires pharmacies to retain prescriber identifiable and patient identifiable records concerning the prescriptions that they fill. The basis for these laws is typically fraud prevention within the Medicare or Medicaid system, as well as some level of law enforcement surveillance concerning abuse of prescription drugs, particularly prescription narcotics. So pharmacies in Vermont are required to retain this information for a period of time, and they have developed a business of selling this information in prescriber identifiable form to companies like IMS Health and Verispan. These companies are data aggregators. They're data warehouses.
This is not unique to Vermont.
No, this is not unique to Vermont. This happens in many states. The requirement that pharmacies retain this information is common in many states for exactly the same purposes. And IMS Health, Verispan, and others are data aggregators. They're data warehouses who collect this data, repackage it, and then sell it to pharmaceutical companies who use the data in a practice called detailing. And the idea behind detailing is that the pharmaceutical companies are able to use this data, manipulate this data, analyze this data in order to target their marketing efforts at particular physicians.
Now, similar laws were passed previously in Maine and New Hampshire that were upheld by federal courts in those states as constitutional. The Maine and New Hampshire lower courts in those cases held the laws regulated, and this is important, the laws regulated speech but not conduct. And that was a distinction that'll become very important in a moment, as we'll see. And therefore, because they regulated speech, they were therefore implicated the First Amendment, and therefore First Amendment jurisprudence and scrutiny was implicated for purposes of governing and looking at whether and how that kind of speech, in this case commercial speech, could be governed. And the applicable test came from a 1980 Supreme Court case known as Central Hudson. Now, applying that test to the commercial speech test in those cases at the lower court level in Maine and New Hampshire, those courts held that the laws were constitutional because they advanced, referred to as a substantial state purpose. So when those rulings were appealed, I'm talking about Maine and New Hampshire, to the First Circuit, which is the circuit that governs Maine and New Hampshire, but not Vermont, the First Circuit held that actually it was conduct, not speech, that was at issue. And therefore, the test was simply whether the laws advanced a rational state purpose, not a higher level purpose that overcame First Amendment analysis. The Maine and New Hampshire laws were in fact upheld on that basis. When the Vermont law was challenged, a law similar to those that were upheld in Maine and New Hampshire, when the Vermont law was challenged, the appeal went to the Second Circuit, which governed Vermont, and the Second Circuit agreed with the Maine and New Hampshire lower courts that those laws regulate speech rather than conduct. The Second Circuit disagreed with those court findings that the laws, in this case the Vermont law, advanced a substantial state purpose. John, my question is, basic question, have I accurately described the procedural history? And more importantly, what is the Supreme Court's interest in this case?
Well, you've accurately characterized the procedural history. And the one thing I would note is that the IMS Health and Verispan, the petitioners in the First Circuit cases, did file a petition for certiorari with the Supreme Court in the wake of those cases, which the court denied. So the court granted the petition for cert regarding the Second Circuit case, Sorrell. And in light of that, while we certainly don't know what the four or more justices were thinking when they granted cert in Sorrell, I think it's reasonable to speculate that the court's real interest here is in resolving the circuit split. It seems pretty clear to me that the court does not have a specific interest in analyzing the constitutionality of these particular statutes, but rather in resolving the split between the First and Second Circuit.
Which is a pretty clear split. Let's drill down a bit on this conduct versus speech issue. So if you look at this as conduct versus speech, that distinction is obviously important because speech requires a higher level of state justification to be regulated since it implicates the First Amendment rights. In the Supreme Court case, which is an appeal from the Second Circuit case, where the Second Circuit did hold that it was speech, not conduct, and therefore the inquiry was the central Hudson test of substantial state purpose. My question is, what substantial state purpose are the states, Vermont in the current case and the Sorrell case, what substantial state purpose are they claiming to advance with these laws?
Well, there are a few claims that are made on behalf of the states. First, and I think most significant, is that the states maintain that the most substantial state interest advanced by these statutes is a monetary interest. It's an economic interest. The states have argued that the practice of detailing, as implemented by the pharmaceutical companies, results in higher costs for state health insurance plans, and that curtailing the practice of detailing is a substantial state interest insofar as it saves the state money. So that's the economic interest. The states have also discussed the doctor's right to privacy in how they treat their patients, the prescriptions that they write, and not having their prescription histories disclosed to data aggregators and pharmaceutical companies. And the states have further discussed patients' privacy interests as being advanced by the statute insofar as the statute restricts the disclosure of information and the use of information that can be used to identify particular patients and what their health care is and what their prescription history is.
There are a number of issues at stake for the states, including privacy, but not just privacy. Assume that it is speech. Did the Second Circuit say that privacy was not a substantial state interest, or that it could not be? Or alternatively, did the court just say that Vermont had simply not made its case through this, you know, use of this particular law? And if it's really a problem with the law itself, what are the problems with the law?
The Second Circuit holding found that the states were not particularly interested in advancing privacy interest in this case. Essentially, the court looked at the legislative history of the statute. It looked at the statements of the legislators, the lawmakers who passed it. It looked at the surrounding research. And the Second Circuit determined, though one judge on the panel did dissent, but the majority in the Second Circuit did determine that the economic interest was primarily driving the states here. And they found as a factual matter, not that patient privacy or doctor privacy could not be a substantial state interest, but rather that in this case, it was not a substantial state interest identified by the state of Vermont. So they made a pretty factually based finding in the Second Circuit. Now, one judge disagreed in dissent and believed that the states had made a factual case and did have a factual basis for advancing those privacy interests. So what is at stake in the Supreme Court in this case is, in the first instance, whether or not patient privacy and physician privacy can constitute a substantial state interest. And in the second instance, whether or not it does constitute a substantial state interest that Vermont is trying to advance with this particular law.
Yeah, and there was a statement, and I'll quote it, in the Second Circuit's opinion. The Second Circuit pointed to this as evidence of how the law limits the use of this data, again, under privacy, limits the use of this data for certain purposes but not others. And the quote from the Second Circuit was, this is a finding of fact, as you said, the statute plainly does not protect physician privacy. Physician privacy might be protected If the statute prohibited the collection and aggregation of prescriber identifiable data for any purpose, or if the use of such data were permitted in only rare and compelling circumstances. You mentioned to me yesterday that this is a bit of an unusual case because oftentimes you see, especially cases at the appeals and the Supreme Court level, you know, a case rejected or as unconstitutional because they're overly broad. They're too broad. And in this case, in many ways, there's an argument that it should be just the other way around. Can you talk about the significance of that statement?
Sure. Typically, when you see constitutional challenges under the First Amendment to state regulatory laws, you encounter circumstances where the laws are not sufficiently narrowly tailored to the particular state purpose. You encounter circumstances where everyone acknowledges that there is a substantial state interest or an overriding state interest. They acknowledge that the state law does in some way promote that state interest, but then they disagree on whether or not that law is sufficiently narrow as to survive constitutional scrutiny. And often, when those laws are struck down by the Supreme Court, the response by lawmakers is to go back and narrow the statute, to make its scope less broad. In this case, it's exactly the reverse scenario, and the holding below suggests that courts would be more likely to uphold prescription privacy laws like the one passed in Vermont if those laws were broader, if they regulated more conduct rather than less, and thereby more powerfully advanced the substantial state interest that Vermont enunciated in patient privacy and in physician privacy. So it's a little bit of an unusual situation. It's not unheard of, but it is unusual. And I believe that it leads to a circumstance where the Supreme Court is going to have to analyze whether or not an imperfect state law that nonetheless advances a substantial state interest can survive First Amendment scrutiny.
John, please, if you would, tell our listeners a bit about what Epic does and also where listeners can find more information about this case and, of course, Epic has an amicus brief in this case, where they can find information about that.
Sure. We're a nonprofit public research center in Washington, D.C. We've been around for about 17 years now, and we are dedicated to advancing the cause of privacy rights, and civil liberties in the electronic age. We routinely file amicus briefs in the U.S. Supreme Court, federal circuit courts, and in some cases, state supreme courts. We regularly file regulatory comments before federal agencies, testify in Congress, and help lawmakers and judges engage with complex technology issues that impact privacy law. You can find us on the web at epic.org, E-P-I-C.org. And if you want to see Epic's Supreme Court amicus brief in this case, you can find that on the website, or you can just search on IMS versus Sorrell. I believe we're either the number one or number two hit on Google.
Yeah, we will also put a link to the brief on the write-up for the podcast. John, one thing I forgot to ask, when are our oral arguments in the case? I know cert was granted just in January.
Oral argument is scheduled for the morning of April 26th.
Oh, terrific. I want to thank John. I want to thank you for joining us today, and we hope to have you, John, on the podcast again soon. I also want to thank our podcast producer, Thomas Yarnell, who's working in the background. I'm Andrew Mirsky. I can be reached at 202-339-0303 or at andy@mirskylegal.com. Also, Twitter hashtag @MirskyLegal. Thank you, John Verdi of Epic. Thank you, all of our listeners, for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week.